아니 당근 당근 저기 누가 누가 세야 당 디기 주야 되랴 당은 또 다른 치 응급이 튕기에 되네 디기 주야 당 안내 강아 세야 응급이 용고하래 때 이내 또왕아서다 누가 여야 디기 주소에 가르치는 것을 생각해서 셈 삼노단에 당당 마신회 진의 용고래서 대인자 당은 저기 누가 세야 당 디기 주야기 탑람 で、まず、セムレア、ギュワタチェ、サムギュワタテ、ニチゲ、ニスイチ、ムイニスダハコヤイ、ハコワチェ、テネサムレアギュワタチェ、トシンティギュチュエタドワセコウレス。テネザダンジュゲ、サムナルヤ、コムジャエダ、サムタナガリスタンゴレレネ、タテネギ、サムタダリクマブユベナネタ、ゾウロチタ、シュウエネダ、ニエジュン、コワレ、 아니 코왈에 견토네 데라 타르비 타르바세 토부도 샘피기 타르바 토드게 삼바 예중기 오레스 콤보레스 아니 데네 데야 수수지부 아니 타르바 토드와 마인바 심젠 탐제 라나신 디기드바 동안 미드바 지바인다 심제 탐제 동안에 저고 오레 제산지 심제 탐제 기도는다 산요코파 토바쇼 샘피게 자주 샘기아레 디 삼당 오레세 아, 데네게 샘께바 잠기다 상역고바 투투그레스네 톱투구 마레스네 가르고그레스네 묘모바 빵고고레 묘모바 빵야레 녀보는 양답에 따와 동이도 비셔라도 공고고레 디마고나 아니 묘모바 빵투구 마레 디네 상역고바 톱투구 마레 디인자 또 양답에 따와 동이도 비셔라 공고레스 나 디숨들이 양아 저게 늘로피온체 디아곰체 냠네체고레스지 Dine Shepala Dine, Nangantu Kuruya Dunga Tadala Chora Tuya Dunga, Andu Dunga Chasang Se Tuya Digi, Dingi Diwa Chub Tuya Diyo Ngure Yesa. Na Dine Zan, Anta Dikwar Ma Lamsa Namsum Se Dikwa Shukurwa.
Good morning. We started a couple of days ago looking at this text, the three principal aspects of the path. And the reason we're looking at this text is because ourselves individually, just like all sentient beings, have a deep inner yearning for freedom of pain and misery and to experience lasting, stable happiness. And this is our overriding or our underlying motivation for all our endeavors. In order to achieve a state of lasting happiness, we do require favorable material circumstances, but these aren't primary. No matter how good one's material circumstances are, we know that we still experience mental pain and anguish. Our happiness, therefore, primarily depends on our mental attitude, primarily depends on our way of thinking. So therefore, to be able to eliminate suffering and attain happiness, we have to transform our way of thinking, in particular, we have to understand reality. We have to understand reality in order to experience happiness. And how to do so? The Buddha Dharma presents many paths to cultivate within ourselves. There are many steps of training presented in a graduated sequence to achieve lasting happiness. And these are condensed into three principal aspects. The first of which is definite emergence. Definite emergence arises through reflecting on the faults of cyclic existence, coming to see how suffering pervades samsara and giving rise thereby to a determination to emerge from the suffering realms of samsara and attain a state liberated, free from suffering. That is the first of the principal aspects. Thereafter, one focuses one's attention from one's own state within cyclic existence and recognizes that each and every other single sentient being without exception is in the same position, yearning for happiness but remaining bound within the suffering realms of samsara due to the same reason, their own afflicted minds. And in this way, we generate compassion for their suffering, giving rise to a strong, overwhelming wish, may all beings develop a state that is freed from suffering. and conjoined with this, we generate love. May all beings attain a state of lasting, stable happiness. And we develop this further into the determination to become a Buddha, so that we can lead all beings to achieve their own enlightenment. And this is the mind of bodhicitta. And this is the second of the three principal aspects. These two, though, on their own, are insufficient to lead to the attainment of our aspiration thus far developed, that of Buddhahood. One has to also abandon what holds us back from becoming a Buddha, what holds us back from realizing reality. And that is our own afflictions, together with their seeds. So these have to be abandoned, and they are abandoned through cultivating the correct view, the wisdom realizing emptiness. And the correct view is the third principal aspect. So all the trainings of the path are condensed into these three principal aspects. And that's what we're continuing to look at in our text. The mind of enlightenment, bodhicitta, this comes about in dependence on causes. Without the required causes being accumulated, bodhicitta cannot be generated. So therefore, it's imperative that we first come to recognize clearly the causes that will lead to the attainment of bodhicitta, and thereafter, we will be armed with the required knowledge to be able to cultivate bodhicitta within our own continuums. What we need to do to generate bodhicitta is independent on our prior training in definite emergence. We now need to shift the focus of our attention from our own suffering state to that of others. So we need to shift our attention to the situation that others find themselves in. And on that basis, we can engage in the cultivation of the primary causes that will lead to bodhicitta, love and compassion, developed, or we can call them together, the altruistic attitude. But primarily, the causes that lead to the attainment of bodhicitta are love and compassion.
The translation didn't express it so clearly earlier, but there are three primary causes. So now, these three primary causes in brief, love, compassion, and the altruistic attitude of universal responsibility. Then the meaning in brief is, love is this strong wish, may all beings abide in a state of lasting, stable happiness. Compassion is the wish, may all beings abide in a state freed of suffering. And then the altruistic attitude of universal responsibility comes about independent on the prior cultivation of love and compassion, where the practitioner takes as their own personal responsibility to ensure that each being attains a state of lasting happiness, freed of suffering. In other words, the practitioner, having generated love and compassion, now no longer is content to leave it at a mere aspiration, but is determined to fulfill that aspiration themselves. That is the altruistic attitude of universal responsibility.
To give rise to love and compassion of the strength that is required in order for bodhicitta later to be generated takes particular training. Because love and compassion, whilst we refer to this and experience it in our everyday life, the love and compassion that leads to bodhicitta needs to be of a particular strength. And for it, for one's wish, for beings to experience a state of lasting happiness, in other words, to generate the mind of love, one needs to recognize that beings are suffering. Similarly, to give rise to the mind of compassion, may all beings be freed of suffering, one has to recognize that beings are suffering. And this recognition of suffering, if it is superficial, so too will the resulting love and compassion. The stronger the recognition that beings are suffering, the stronger will be the wish, may beings be freed of suffering, may beings abide in happiness. So therefore, if we have the aspiration to give rise to actual love and compassion, it is indispensable that we come to recognize the true nature of samsara, the depth and breadth of suffering that all beings are experiencing, not just at a coarse level, but down to the subtlest of levels, and come to recognize how beings have since beginning of time and will continue to suffer in this way, life after life, in an uncontrolled manner, as long as they remain bound in samsara. So we have to again vividly come to recognize suffering and its causes in order to give rise to a transformative aspiration for beings to be freed of suffering and its causes and to abide in a state of lasting happiness through the accumulation of those particular causes. And again, in order to give rise to genuine and powerful love and compassion, this only comes about in relation to the strength and depth of our realization of suffering.
Some jelly and the Dunga, Dunga, Gu, Dunga, Sada, Chava, Dunga, Dunga, Lepa,
Again, in order to generate love and compassion, this will come about only in dependence or in relation to the strength of love and compassion that we generate will be in direct relation to the strength and depth that we understand suffering and its causes. And yesterday, we looked at suffering and its causes. We spoke about the threefold division of suffering in brief, that of the suffering of physical and mental pain, the suffering of transient happiness, and all-pervasive suffering. We can reflect on this by recalling what we have experienced ourselves and what we observe in the world, looking at the suffering of humans and animals to start, recognizing the tremendous suffering that we observe and have experienced ourselves. People suffer from being ill, and when the illness is serious, those around them suffer too. People suffer from poverty, struggling to feed themselves, struggling to fulfill their responsibility to their families. And even those who have comfortable material conditions, we also know that they don't experience any mental peace either. Whilst materially they are comfortable, their minds, like others, are full of anguish. And this is a similar situation, of course, for animals, but compounded by their lack of intelligence. When animals experience illness, other than perhaps eating something, all they can do is stand and hope that it passes and they don't die. Moreover, they suffer from the constant fear of being caught by a more powerful predator and eaten alive. So thinking like this, we can see on a coarse level, the sufferings that beings experience, and recognize, especially when we include both the physical and the mental difficulties that beings experience, we recognize that suffering is continuous. One suffering befalls us after another, and that there are times when suffering seems to pour down on us like rain. And that this process has no end in sight. And it has no end in sight because the causes are continuously accumulated and not being eliminated. And these causes are that as long as we have these physical and mental aggregates that have come about in dependence on the contaminated karma that we accumulated by our own afflicted minds, we will suffer. We will continue to suffer. Sometimes the suffering that beings experience is overwhelmingly obvious to everyone. At other times it's slight, just mental discontent and lack of peace of mind. But it's always there. And that the root cause of all suffering is the ignorance of self-grasping. This consciousness that misapprehends phenomena and believes them to exist in a way that they do not, where there is a discord between appearance and reality. This ignorance, particularly in relation to the self, the ignorance of self-grasping, is the reason for all suffering within samsara.
곰야디체 다 디린다 딘마 하섬 남다 아세디 다 심제 담체 산조 고발레 고야디 니 지긴 세베게다 섬 라섬 남다 기에디마 섬 다다 디 송고르딘마
Our class yesterday afternoon, there I presented the technique used in this text to generate love and compassion. Now, we're going to move to the third of the three causes to generate bodhicitta, how to generate the altruistic attitude of universal responsibility.
Coming
to the eighth verse. Born into cyclic existence that has no end, tormented by the three sufferings without respite, thinking of the plight of all mother beings who are in this very situation, generate the supreme altruistic intention to become enlightened. Looking at the first line, born into cyclic existence that has no end. So this continues from the seventh verse. So these two verses are read together. Building then on what has been looked at, we recognize that until the causes for uncontrolled rebirth in cyclic existence are completely eradicated, beings will continue to take uncontrolled rebirth in samsara. And if our recognition of the sufferings of samsara is slight, this line will have not much impact on us. But to the extent we have come to recognize the sufferings of samsara and its causes, this will have a profound impact on us. This will potentially have a profound impact on us. In that we come to recognize that each and every ordinary being is always in danger of their life ending right now and uncontrolled rebirth being taken in any of the realms of samsara. And especially if one has meditated in depth, one will recognize all the realms of samsara as suffering. There'll be lower and upper realms, but they'll all be suffering realms. And every being is constantly living with the danger that death and great suffering can befall them in any moment.
Second line, tormented by the three sufferings without respite. This is the situation that we find ourselves in as well as all beings. And again, this line will have a level of impact on us in direct relation to our realization of suffering and its causes. Because we all recognize suffering, but we also have the belief that we have better periods in our life. We have better days than others. We have maybe a better period of time than others. And whilst this is true, there is a degree of relativity between more intense and less intense suffering. If we have really reflected well on suffering and its causes, we will recognize that even when the causes of suffering is not manifest and things appear to be going well and we're having a good time, in the very nature of our experience and ourselves, there is suffering. And not only do we experience suffering on subtle levels at all times, so too do we always abide with the risk of our situation becoming intolerably worse. And this is continuous for all beings as long as they remain chained by their own afflictions into the suffering realm of samsara.
Then Then one to meet and don't roll at dinner. Then Yawa Bada dinner some down, do I dig here? Tajuai never getting a eating as Chagores. Do Chene Shimjuchin and Azuge. Then Duma Manga Kasuli to Sebeke, Yawa Basetting as Toybus, Delin Yawa Bale to my dinner, don't roll at the name, one has milli to at the name Dua. That you do my Yagi, Azuke, Cabrin Yak of the Hawaii, the kind of stimbu do it, Mindu Chevachin, or the Mindu Lamsa.
By this point, one should have already reflected well on the three sufferings. And therefore, reading the second line, tormented by the three sufferings, one will have a vivid understanding of suffering. And of the three sufferings, the first suffering of physical and mental pain, beings already know what, have an experience of what this is. No one wants to suffer physically, nor mentally. So the general physical and mental suffering that we experience is included here. The second type of suffering, this is not even recognized, and in fact sounds quite surprising in society, the suffering of transient happiness. Because transient happiness is the happiness that ordinary beings strive for. It's the pleasures that we experience in samsara, but from a perspective of someone coming to understand the nature of the reality of samsara and wanting to give rise to a wish for liberation, they will recognize that this happiness, this too is in the nature of suffering. And this is because not only the causes that have led to this happiness are tainted with afflictions, but this happiness that we've desired so and now are experiencing is transitory. It's not just in the sense that it changes moment by moment, but in almost no time it ends. We know this from our own life, a lived experience. Every feeling of pleasure, slight or great, has ended. Every bit of good news, every welcome experience, has ended. When we look closely, we see how quickly it changes. And thereafter, not only does new suffering come our way, but we suffer due to yearning, missing for that previous moment of happiness, or that previously attained happiness. And then we mistakenly apply our time and energy to try and achieve something so fleeting again. And in this way, beings stay deceived and confused. So this is why the second type of suffering, suffering a transient happiness, is recognized as suffering. The reason that we experience the suffering of physical mental pain and the suffering of transient happiness is due to the third type of suffering, that of all-pervasive conditioning. What that means is, as long as we have this body and mind, these physical and mental aggregates, we have the basis for suffering. As long as we have aggregates, body and mind, that has come about independent and contaminated karma accumulated by afflictions, our body and mind is in the nature of suffering. The very nature of our body and mind has at its essence a flaw, a fault. And that is, it was accumulated, the causes were mixed with the afflictions. And therefore the nature of our body and mind has this fault. And this means we will, as long as we have these aggregates, we will continue to experience suffering, physical and mental pain, as well as that of transient happiness. And here, we can readily recognize this Even when our mental state is calm and peaceful, our mood can so easily change. Based on a small event, a small frustration, our peace of mind can be lost. Likewise, when we are in good health, unexpectedly, illness can befall us. And this we know from our own experience. And that illness, even when we experience it, it doesn't mean, as again we know this from our experience, that this is necessary as we're experiencing it right now is as bad as it may get. It may well get worse. And even when we're healing, a further illness may come. And this we know from our own lived experience. And this is all because we have this basis of contaminated aggregates. And as long as we have this basis of contaminated aggregates, this third suffering, suffering experiences will continue to befall on us without end.
We need to recognize in great detail the sufferings of samsara. Then we need to look deeper at what the causes are for suffering. Superficial causes for superficial suffering, this we know and we can observe, they're widely known in samsara. But superficial causes come from deeper causes.
subtler forms of suffering, they also come from deeper or subtler causes. So in brief, if we take, say, our aggregates, the basis upon which we suffer, we have achieved these aggregates due to karma that we ourselves accumulated. That karma was accumulated under the influence of the afflictions. So therefore the karma is contaminated because it was accumulated by the afflictions. And the afflictions themselves have a cause, and that is the ignorance of self-grasping. So there's this chain of continuity. From the ignorance of self-grasping, its resulting afflictions and accumulated contaminated karma that has resulted in every consciousness that we have, that we experience, as well as our body. So here, when we understand the sequence that at the root is the ignorance of self-grasping, we can easily understand intellectually that should the root cause of something be eradicated, what it would otherwise lead to will cease. So as the ignorance of self-grasping is the root cause, this is where we should turn our attention. And we turn our attention there not merely to gather knowledge, but to gather knowledge, to gain experience of what is this ignorance of self-grasping, so as to see if it is possible to eradicate it. So therefore we come to investigate the ignorance of self-grasping with an inquiring mind, wondering, wanting to see for ourselves whether it is possible to eradicate. Firstly, if it's an ignorance that grasps at the self, then let's see what that ignorance grasps at. How does the self appear to us? So our sense of self appears to us as vividly real, almost as if it's something that one can touch, something that's unchanging, that's always been there. And it's unchanging and self-existent. This is how it appears to us, as unchanging and self-existent, in the sense that no matter our time of life or what we're going through, what we're experiencing, or our developments in other ways, that sense of self is there, unchanging, because it exists by its own nature, its own essence. So in this way, it appears as real to us. And then we have a consciousness that apprehends the self or grasps at the self. It doesn't just appear, but we grasp at it as existing in the way that it appears. Not as an illusion, but it's existing in the way that it appears. And when something is accepted as existing in the way that it appears, this is the meaning of true. It's not false, it's true. And therefore, this can be called the ignorance of true grasping, where true means that accepting that something exists in the way that it appears. And here, as we're looking at the self, this true grasping is called self-grasping. And when we investigate to see whether the self exists in the way that is apprehended, in the way that is grasped at, we come to recognize that the self doesn't exist by way of its own nature or existence. Rather, it is empty of doing so. Therefore, this consciousness that grasps at the self as existing by way of its own nature is a wrong consciousness, because the self does not exist by way of its own nature. And therefore, this wrong consciousness is an ignorance, the ignorance of self-grasping. And if we can recognize in our reflection that the self is empty of existing in the way that it appears, it's empty of existing truly or inherently by way of its own nature or essence, this is a consciousness that is in accordance with reality, unlike the ignorance. And therefore, this is a consciousness of wisdom. And it's a consciousness of wisdom that is realizing the self is empty of existing in the way that it appears. Now that we can recognize, at least on an intellectual and perhaps a superficial level, that the root cause of all suffering is a wrong consciousness and ignorance, and that a consciousness in accordance with reality, a wisdom, can be cultivated by ourselves, we recognize that an end to suffering is possible. An end to suffering is possible. And not only is it possible, but it is achievable. And therefore, we recognize that we, through cultivating this wisdom, can eradicate the root cause that leads to this chain of this chain of events that lead to suffering. We can bring an end to suffering, and lasting stable happiness can be achieved. And if it's achievable for ourselves, it is achievable for each and every sentient being. What sentient beings require is skilled and realized guides. So therefore, I will strive to spiritually develop so that I can guide beings to achieve a state of lasting happiness, and therefore fulfill my aspiration of love. I will strive to spiritually develop so that I can guide beings based on my own knowledge and experience to achieve a state freed of suffering, and therefore fulfill my aspiration of compassion. And this is where we develop special intention, or the altruistic attitude of universal responsibility. Having reflected well on suffering and its causes, as one should have done previously when cultivating definite emergence, but reminding ourselves now of suffering and its causes, as well as that those causes can be eradicated, we now turn our attention to the situation of all mother sentient beings. So the third line, thinking of the plight of all mother beings who are in this very situation. This is where we generate the determination to be of greatest benefit to others. Tablam
지난 디기 주위에 유디네 되는 사고래 유디네 사바나 아니 디기 주투구래 세비 콘솔에 탑람 띵 거래 다 탑람 띵 발라 다 소소게 탑람 띵야데 다 소소 신도미도 소소 마시나 시안에 탑람 띵 두마라와 지난 소소 신바시 거고래 지난 디네 인자 당이 탑람 띵 바데 나랑게다데 네 지고 슬럽데 당 하나야 뉴바도 스탐데 뉴바 민두 지난 디네 인자 다 디네게 탑람 지다와 신도 Then to when Nuba Yukin Suludus, Sanji said to Sanjo Goma Tokudu said, Sanjo Goma Tokudu said, Tokudu and big, some of the Nilimore. Dineza, Samja Tamjigudin, Sanjo Goma Tokur Show, Jigin, Sebeda, Samji Nilimore. Jetangi, Samja Tamjigud, Sanjo Goma Matova in the Samji Duma said, and Digi Duella, Dutum, Jetugumin, Jetangondo, Ni Digi Sehudu. Digi Jukudu, me duma se hudu, then Zangalaya, Chayen the Carbos, Marang, Dampo Sanjukoma, Tokudu, Jesangara, Shingudu, Marang Yun, then Chabaj and the Demba, Rangi, Yun Hamjad and Java, Yun Hamjad and Demba, the Sugudu, these were San Dinni, Consulia, Rangi, Yamyon, Tony, Consulia, Lubjinje, She, Yamlin, Jejo, Dusian, Anni, Gansi, Tudu, Dinza, me Dampo, Marang Samja Tamjudu, Sanjukoma, Tokudu, Simbe Dinni, Cosimje. Some gentlemen didn't say you go about towards Jiggy, same best towards Shaw, same big, and same kid did you or is it? Then answer some near, same chore, Jepper, too, said Dura Simchik.
Having reflected well then on suffering and its causes, to the extent that one has done so, love and compassion arise. When that reflection has been done into profound depth, strong determination to be of benefit to others will arise, especially to benefit them in the most meaningful of ways. And this then comes about in the fourth line. I'll read the last two together. Thinking of the plight of all mother sentient beings who are in this very situation, generates the supreme altruistic intention to become enlightened. So the fourth line is where one develops the altruistic attitude of universal responsibility. And this again is when one has generated great love and compassion for beings, wanting them to experience a lasting state of happiness through accumulating those causes, and in order to do so, to eradicate all suffering through eliminating those causes. And that's the compassion element. Here, though, one develops it beyond a mere aspiration, how wonderful it would be, may it be so, to I will bring it about. And not only I will bring it about, but I take the situation of each being as my personal responsibility, that each being achieves for themselves a state of lasting happiness, I take it as my responsibility, my personal responsibility. This then is where one develops the altruistic attitude of universal responsibility. To make this clear then, think of an analogy. If one perhaps has visited another country where there are a lot of uneducated people, perhaps they illiterate, and you see how limited their life is due to illiteracy, compassion will naturally arise for you, wanting them to be freed of this cause of their suffering. And love will arise, wanting them to experience the benefits of being freed of that suffering. And so that arisal of love and compassion for their situation, and it comes about independence of recognizing the cause. But if that love and compassion is strong, you won't just leave it at a mere aspiration. Oh, how wonderful it would be. Maybe get annoyed that the government hasn't done anything about it. But rather you take it as your responsibility. You've recognized that beings are suffering. And you've recognized the reason. And you say to yourself, actually, I can do something about this. I can do something about this. And then you apply yourself to accumulating the specific causes, wagging your finger, complaining, using your authority, that's not going to do anything on its own. Selling specific things, that too won't do anything on its own. You recognize the required causes, which is based on education. That education needs to be shared. And that is how uneducated people can become educated, and they can overcome this problem and achieve some happiness. And therefore, you go about setting up the required organization and educating people. So in the same way here, the aspirant bodhisattva has recognized the suffering situation of all mother sentient beings, and has recognized the reasons why they are suffering, and that there is a solution. And they then develop this determination to be the person that guides all sentient beings in the eradication of the causes of suffering and the accumulation of the causes that will lead to happiness. They take that as their responsibility. But in order to fulfill that responsibility, they recognize they themselves need further education, and that education needs to be further integrated within themselves. Because there's limits to the aspirant bodhisattva's wisdom, and therefore there are limits to how skillfully they can interact with beings. Because they recognize that beings, there's a wide variety in terms of karmic backgrounds and individual spiritual dispositions amongst beings. And to benefit each one in the most appropriate way, the aspirant bodhisattva has to eradicate their own ignorance. So therefore, they commit to becoming the most skilled of guides, a Buddha. And they do so not for their own benefit, but so that they can fulfill their aspirational love and compassion, and bring that about in reality. So therefore, they commit to striving to develop ever more knowledge, or acquire ever more knowledge, and integrate that knowledge within themselves, transform their way of thinking. Knowing that whilst they're going through this process of developing knowledge and gaining experience based on that knowledge, they will be able to, from then, from right now, be of ever greater benefit to others and already start enacting their love and compassion. So this is how the altruistic attitude of universal responsibility is generated, and that is the meaning of our fourth line: generate the supreme altruistic intention to become enlightened. this process that I've laid out, you all know from your own lives, because this is the process adopted in society as well. For example, if you can sing beautifully, and you'd love to be a singing instructor, and perhaps, or perhaps you already are, and you want to teach your students a particular song, you have to know that song first. And not just know it intellectually, you need to be a bit skilled in singing it well, so that you can teach your students. Similarly, if one enjoys a sport, perhaps a particular sport, and one aspires to become either a sports person or a coach of that sport, one knows you have to be really skilled at it. It's not enough merely to have watched it on television. You have to be skilled in that sport, and not only skilled in that sport, skilled in how to teach it. So therefore, one needs experience based on knowledge. Likewise, if one has a particular love of if one has a love of a particular academic field, and one has the yearning to spend one's life immersed in that academic field, it's likely one will enjoy talking about this particular academic field. So one may then have the aspiration, oh, I'd love to work as a university lecturer teaching this topic. So one has this aspiration, and one can see the benefits that would come to others, but then one has to gain knowledge in that topic, and deep knowledge in that topic, as well as skill in communicating it. With either of those aspects lacking, one will be a pretty useless lecturer, and one's students will not benefit. So therefore, in the Dharma and in society, if one is going to guide others, it's indispensable that one has experience based on knowledge.
And then again, Janju Simke, who is a Simjan, Tamjisanju Kovato, Simbe Janju Simke. Janju Simke, but the Miasanju Kovato, two grades and two go marriage. Is that Simjan Tamsanju Kovato, Chigi, Sinus Janju Simke, or do? That's on you, Watobalaya, Yamlin Karchikore, said you. Daddy, Luna is near you to me, Sudim Soyata. And the Sweben Yamletia, Jimben Yamletia, Sudim Yamletia. 那嘴边念的
then applying this attention to others, generating love and compassion, and thereafter, the altruistic attitude of universal responsibility, and thereby bodhicitta, one now has overwhelming determination to spiritually transform in order to be of ever greater benefit to others. So therefore, one has a strong determination to engage in the activities of a bodhisattva, because these are indispensable for training one's mind. The ethical restraint of restraining one's physical and verbal behavior through restraining one's mind, generosity, patience, joyous perseverance, concentration, and wisdom. All of these one makes great endeavor now to train one's mind in.
마송바이나 아니 소수기 소수이라 아니 지게 능아 있으면 예제 망고선 디바사고 제가 디바드 방마도는 아니 아 저기 예 산적고 봐 토투야요 말 제가 니네서 능아 있으면 예제 좀 수름 쏜 거야디 소수기 결라 녀몽 봐 맞지 수름 쏜야지 산적고 봐 토베치도 제가 니네 하신 소수기 예제 좀 수름 쏜 마도 번에 현재 판도 제도 말로 가서 소수기 칸에 봐 샬리야 특수시하다 준시하다 아니 제 제배나 Shall ဆမ်တန်ရှင်ကျပါစင်ပါစံရံကျေစင်ရဲ့စပ်လျာရှင်ကျပါစင်ပါစံရှင်လက်ကြီးတို့ရှင်ရံကျေစင်ပါလို့တော်ချင်ရှင်ကျပါစင်ပါစံချက်သာစွရင်စုံကြည့်တယ်လူငါယေရှုမြေတွေပဲညေကြီးကိုသူရှင်ဆုံးရာရံကျေစင်ရဲ့စပ်ဆုံးရာဒီငေဒတိကလောက်ချာကြည့်ရတဲ့ငါတို့ဒီနေ့ကလည်းဆမ်လုံးလာတဲ့သူရှင်ကျောင်းတို့ရှိကိုရဲကြည့်တယ်
The ethical restraint of body, speech, and mind, or to express it differently, the ethics of restraining one's body, speech, and mind. This is an indispensable training for all Buddhas, and of course for bodhisattvas too. The bodhisattva will train in the ethics of restraining their body, speech, and mind through recognizing that even slight non-virtue impedes one's spiritual progression. Moreover, even slight non-virtue brings harm to others. And bringing harm to others is contrary to the aspiration they've given rise to benefit others. So with this understanding, a bodhisattva will be determined to restrain their mind from the afflictions and keep the mind virtuous. And in this way, their physical and behavior too will be restrained. And in particular, a bodhisattva who's a highly developed being will recognize that the primary cause of all the problems that they experience, as well as the problems they bring into the lives of others, is their self-cherishing mind. The self-cherishing mind we can understand as the thought of, I want, I don't want. And from this attachment to the I want comes, and I don't want comes. And not only then with this attachment, this affliction that leads to their therefore afflicted behavior, anger also follows. And then we speak to others in a harsh manner. We take advantage of others. So a bodhisattva's primary training in ethics is guarding against the self-cherishing mind, and in its place, cultivating the other cherishing mind. This is done through valuing others, the happiness of others, before their own happiness. And the bodhisattva trains in taking great delight in fulfilling the needs of others and ignoring their own wishes and wants. This way helps them train to keep their primary focus on benefiting others and not being overcome by their own self-obsession, their own self-interest.
ကျေကံမြပါဆွဆွကြီးထွင်းချင်းတရှင်ကြီးတွင်တွေ့ရလျာဆွဆွကြီးကျေကံမြပါဆွဆွကြီးထွင်းချင်းရှမ်းလျာရောပချေရလျာထွင်းချင်းခရိုင်းနာဆောင်းဝါချကိုကိုရပါကျေစံဒီနေ့ကထွင်းချင်းဆောင်းဝါရောရဲ့ကြီးငကြည့်တီငါတို့ကြီးကျင်းပြင်းညံလက်ချေတရှာကိုရကျေစံရှမ်းလျာကျင်းပြင်းဆွဆွကြီးကျင်းပြင်းညံလက်ချေဒီမဟုတ်ပါနဲ့ဆွဆွကြီးရှင်ကြီးတွင်တွေ့ရလျာထွင်းချင်းခရိုင်းထောင်းနဲ့ရောပချေနဲ့ရောပ 那所属于先于对人家全部准备了，那你刚刚忙不用过了哇？其实刚刚得了了以后，就搞不了呀，得了呀，全部空巴土完了，那你这个什么就加呀？当，那你这些空着拿呀的，等前边呢，很先于对人就土嘛嘞，那所属于呢，你把车上上土过嘛？就是，其实也忙完了，所属于先于对人准备搞不了，刚刚开始呢，得了呀，那东人就土呀的，那这个什么就马车吧？
利用那个什么吃印度吃不起来了呀？满足他的那什么了呢？在随便人们吃的，也吃不起来噻。其实随便人们吃不，那忙不呢？所以这个什么印度对吧？这个是我这印度吃不来，俺在那些来晚上，闲来碰到主要来，你不吃不用过来，是碰到吃不用过来。现在随便人们吃，我就也吃不来噻。Generosity
too is a greatly important training for bodhisattva. Take the illustration of material generosity. The bodhisattva will look at the material possessions they have and think to themselves, what I have, I can utilize to benefit others, either directly or indirectly. And actually, now that I have developed this sincere aspiration to become a Buddha for the sake of others, I can commit that whatever I will attain in the future, I will attain as I'm attaining it through my virtuous attitude, I will utilize this solely to benefit others, directly or indirectly. And in fact, the bodhisattva may ask herself, actually, as a bodhisattva, other than using my material goods to be of benefit to others, why do I need them? I only need these to benefit others, directly or indirectly. The third training is that of patience. And patience is of supreme importance for a bodhisattva. As with ethical restraint, patience attitude is concordant with the bodhisattva's outlook. If the bodhisattva is not ethical or patient, they are acting in a way that's contrary to their determination, which is to benefit others in the most meaningful of ways. So therefore, a bodhisattva will be very clear that anger and frustration, these only bring harm to oneself and others, and they're contrary to their aspiration. And moreover, they impede their spiritual development and thereby their ability to be of ever greater benefit to others. So therefore, in dependence on their strong love and compassion, bodhisattvas are patient with all the harm they experience from others, or the inner frustration that they feel. And they readily are able to overcome such afflictions. The fourth training is that of joyous perseverance, which in brief is taking delight in virtue. The bodhisattva in particular will take delight in ethical restraint, delight when they are preventing the arisal of their self-cherishing mind, delight in seeing their spiritual development in this way. They'll take delight in their practices of generosity, in the development of this generous attitude, this attitude of giving of themselves to others. Similarly, they'll take delight in their patient attitude, that when they are experiencing a hardship from others or from their own inner turmoil, seeing that their attitude is subdued, that their mind is remaining unafflicted, and thereby they are only responding in a helpful way, no matter what harm they receive, they'll take delight in this. Taking delight in virtue also includes taking delight in studying and meditating. And therefore, whenever obstacles come to receiving teachings or meditating on those teachings, the bodhisattva will joyously overcome those obstacles.
and see these as obstacles to be overcome. Because the Bodhisattva recognizes the grave danger that laziness presents them, laziness presents the danger of the Bodhisattva being distracted on their path of spiritual development. Laziness presents the danger of the Bodhisattva's priorities being altered and rather prioritizing what is not so important and forgetting that the most important thing is their continued spiritual development and their expression of that in terms of benefiting others.
All these varying stages of meditation that have been presented thus far, of the two types of meditation, placement and analytical, these are included in analytical meditation. And ideally, these should be done with placement meditation too. But just to briefly recap what we've been looking at these analytical meditations, we need to look at, firstly, our own situation in terms of this precious human rebirth and its impermanence. And also then, building on that strength of mind that reflection leads to, we need to, with great vigor, look at the suffering nature of cyclic existence, at both the breadth of suffering that we experience, as well as on the subtler levels, the subtler levels of our suffering, and thereafter, the causes of suffering. Naturally then, our mind will turn to what can be done about this, especially when you recognize the causes. And there we reflect on the antidote, the wisdom realizing selflessness or the wisdom realizing emptiness. We need to see there, is this something I can do? Am I following? Am I understanding? Can I do this? And we will see that there is a solution and we can apply it. We can achieve the result of this solution. It is not beyond any of us. Then we take this understanding of definite emergence and we apply it to all others, recognizing they are in the same position. And we think about this in great detail
generating love and compassion for them. When that love and compassion is generated in a powerful manner, we take responsibility for their situation. We don't leave it to others to resolve. We have the capacity to eradicate suffering for ourselves. Therefore, we have the capacity to go beyond individual liberation and become Buddhas. We have the capacity thereby to benefit others in the most meaningful of ways. With this recognition, based on powerful love and compassion, we generate the altruistic attitude of universal responsibility. And with this, we accept the determination to become a Buddha. And in order to become a Buddha, one must train in the activities of a bodhisattva, namely generosity, ethical restraint, patience, choice, perseverance, concentration, and wisdom. This afternoon, then, we will continue in the text and we'll come to the remaining two, that of concentration and the correct view. So thank you. We'll leave it there for this morning and we'll continue again this afternoon.